Hello and welcome to the Ecocentrics. I'm Tom.
And I'm PK. And this week we're going to discuss hydrogen.
And what role it might or might not have in our future.
Is it a viable clean energy solution?
Or has it completely run out of steam? Let's go.
All right, Tom, I consider you my hydrogen expert. That's a bad way to start, isn't it?
You consider me someone who knows at least three things about hydrogen.
I bet you could draw the molecular structure right this minute.
I think I could, yeah. Nice and simple, actually, yeah.
No, I bet you could. All right, so I think you definitely know more than I do about hydrogen. So why don't you hit me with some stuff, if you're cool with that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's roll with it. The reason we're talking about hydrogen is because there's so much hype around hydrogen. We always see loads of new stuff about it. There's always, oh, the next hydrogen innovation is going to transform everything. And people keep seeing it as this kind of panacea, the silver bullet solve all of our problems. And there are some really exciting things that make hydrogen part of the future. And it's exciting because it's quite a simple swap out, theoretically, key here, away from our current energy systems, away from gas and oil. So we can use it to generate either heat or electricity, the same way that gas works. It can be produced, stored, and transported without carbon dioxide, so it's clean. It doesn't release all these greenhouse gas emissions when you burn it, like we see with other fuels. It can carry three times as much energy per unit weight as petrol, diesel, or jet fuel. And it can also be pumped in a similar way to normal hydrocarbons.
That sounds all good. Or is it?
A lot of people are seeing it as amazing. And one of the reasons that is worth starting with this, because it's something we're going to come back to throughout this whole process, is the people that are pushing hydrogen, the hydrogen pushers, as I like to see them.
Hydrogen pushers. They're on the corner going, hey, first dose of hydrogen's free.
And all of a sudden we build the infrastructure. Next thing you know, you're hooked. You can't get off of it.
That's right.
We all love it, but is it good? Is it any good at all? I think that's the question we've got to ask. And some hydrogen is good hydrogen. And there's this rainbow of different sorts of hydrogen. A new one seems to be added every single week. But there's some really important ones to recognize. The first one, which is our main way of getting hydrogen at the moment, is through something called gray hydrogen. And this is kind of the key source of hydrogen today. And this is from natural gas, so fossil fuels, through a process called steam methane reforming, or SMR. And basically, that you split down the natural gas and you create hydrogen, and then CO2 gets released into the atmosphere. And this is the main way we create hydrogen at the moment. It's cost effective and it's a simple way to do it. There's a new way which is starting to emerge, and some places are starting to use it, which is called blue hydrogen. And this is using exactly the same process, but instead of having that CO2 just escaping into the atmosphere, we're capturing it and we're storing it underground instead. So we're using something called carbon capture and storage, or carbon capture utilization and storage. And we'll do a podcast on that in the future. And it's good or bad nature, but basically we're capturing that carbon and whacking it underground so it doesn't really go into the atmosphere. So people kind of see that as a net neutral impact. Obviously, getting the hydrogen from wherever you're making it to wherever you're burning it is going to have some emissions associated, because you're going to have to take it on a truck or a boat, or you're going to have to put it through pipes and use energy. But that's a cleaner way of making hydrogen and what we need to be looking for in the future. And then the big other form is what's called green hydrogen. And this is kind of the gold standard. This is what, if you want your hydrogen and you want to go to your hydrogen pusher, you want to be asking him for the green stuff. And this type of hydrogen doesn't use fossil fuels. Instead, it uses renewable energy and a process called electrolysis. And this basically splits water into hydrogen and oxygen. So this process is much, much cleaner because we're not using these fossil fuels in this process. And I think that's what everyone's pushing towards as what we need to be doing for the future of hydrogen. It needs to be green. Otherwise, it's not going to work for a climate-friendly future. However, the hydrogen pushers are the people that are taking and making natural gas right now. They're the people, they're the big oil companies, the big gas companies, which want us to keep using the gas network for as long as possible, and they want to keep using their gas for as long as possible. So they're quite happy pushing hydrogen into the market and saying, oh, we'll get to green hydrogen, I promise we'll get there eventually. But actually, the reality is you're being sold down a different pathway, and we're probably going to be using fossil fuels for hydrogen for a lot longer. Because the reality is, to make green hydrogen, we need lots and lots and lots of renewable energy. And we're already not there enough for our electricity demand alone. Adding even more in for hydrogen is another layer to the mixture.
If I understand things correctly as well, is 95% of the hydrogen that's being produced now is the SMR type. So basically the gray type, is that right?
So gray and blue is the main way we create hydrogen at the moment. We also create some through electrolysis, but not very much.
And that's the green?
Not necessarily. This is the other part of this.
Not necessarily. Oh, depending on if it's using fossil fuels or if it's using renewables. Okay.
I think there's another type of hydrogen I want to mention here, because this is the type of hydrogen I actually think is the most interesting. And my opinion, which shouldn't stand for much really, but my opinion, I think it's a really important pathway for the future. And it's this thing called yellow hydrogen. And yellow hydrogen is using electrolysis, but coming from the grid instead. So rather than having hydrogen, which is just using renewable energy, we use grid electricity instead. And we've talked before on the pod about the balancing that needs to go on with the grid to meet demand, match supply, what's going on here. And I think hydrogen has a really interesting role as a storage medium, particularly when we have lots of renewable energy going all at once. So if the wind's really, really blowing and it's really, really sunny, at the moment we have to curtail, so turn down those renewable energy assets. But I think hydrogen has a really interesting role there by actually plugging into the grid and saying, okay, we know we've got a lot of this stuff generating right now. Let's make low carbon hydrogen, not green. There's still going to be some gas. There's going to be some fossil fuels making that electricity, but actually it's going to be a low carbon form of hydrogen. And I think that's a really interesting role for this. And the reason I think that's important is because it is so hard to get hydrogen around the place, except if we use very specific types of pipework. Therefore, we want hydrogen where we're going to use hydrogen. We don't want hydrogen somewhere else, because that's no good to anyone.
So in terms of these different things, so we've got the gray, blue, green, and yellow types of hydrogen, depending on the source of energy that is used to help create it and the byproducts, I think. In terms of all of these, are there cons aside from some of the things with the gray matter and fossil fuels? So one example I can think of that seems to be the one that everybody runs to initially is it's highly combustible, which in my head, I think, well, so is gas, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point, because actually big news this week has gone on in the hydrogen space. So one of the big concerns about hydrogen is its safety. The reality of it is it is a relatively safe gas to use. Whether you use it as a gas or a liquid, it varies, but relatively safe to use. But the public perception of it is absolutely dire. People associate hydrogen with blimps blowing up, hydrogen bombs, and just things which aren't good. So there was meant to be a hydrogen village going on in Whitby, and that got pushed back. The village basically has come out and said, no, we don't want it. We're not having it. We do not want the hydrogen village anymore because of the safety concerns that come with this and their fear that this is going to make their houses explode. It's going to be dangerous to their kids. And don't get me wrong, there are some things we need to overcome. So for example, when you whack hydrogen on your hob, if you have a normal gas at the moment, without any additives, the hydrogen will burn clear. So you won't be able to see it. So if you've got little kids, they can whack their hands in that because it's invisible. But you can add things to it. You can give additives to it to alleviate that. So some of these problems can be resolved. But the public perception, that's the big one. We need to, if hydrogen is going to work, there needs to be better messaging to enable that to occur.
We could probably go back to when gas became something that was more prevalent, and the same concerns from people were probably there as well. But of course, we're really accustomed and used to gas, so we just don't even think about it, even though it is incredibly combustible. But it's relatively stable, and we have infrastructure in place to make that a good product for us to use. And I think even going back further than that, electricity, when they started having electric lights and electric phones and things like that in homes, I think there was a similar sort of scare of like, well, it's dangerous. You could actually die. You could be electrocuted. And yes, we can, but we see the benefits and we're very accustomed to that now. And there's a whole host of safety, electrical, and gas features, which, we would do the same thing with hydrogen as well, wouldn't we?
Exactly. I think the difference is now, obviously, these things are coming into play when there's a lot more health and safety standards than there was 40, 50, 60 years ago when these other things were starting to be rolled out. So there is more hesitance. And you've hit the nail on the head there that actually the reality is when we moved over to a gas network historically, there was major concern with that. People didn't want to accept that to start with. It took time for people to acknowledge that this was an okay thing to do. The other big thing with hydrogen, and I think this is the reason that I am a somewhat hydrogen doubter in many cases, and I'll get to where I think hydrogen is going to be useful, but I also think hydrogen will not be useful in many other ways. I'm a doubter of hydrogen because it's not very efficient of a process. If you use hydrogen for heating our homes, and as I say, we want to be looking for this gold standard hydrogen, we want to be looking for this green hydrogen. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to use renewable energy. You're going to have to use that renewable energy to run an electrolyzer. You're then going to have to send that out through the distribution network, so pipelines. And then when it arrives at your door, you're going to have to burn that. And as one energy analyst puts it, this is what we have. We have a tyranny of multiple processes. So we have to go through many, many, many steps here, each one losing a bit more efficiency. And this is the issue here, because actually, it's not efficient to use hydrogen for home heating because you're losing so much on the way. On the flip side, the alternative for our future heating systems are heat pumps, where you take electricity, if you're using it straight off the grid, it gets plumbed straight into your house from the wind turbines, solar panels. And then heat pumps, as I said before, are magic, and they're 300 times efficient or 300% efficient, which means that actually for every unit of electricity you're putting in, you're getting 3, 4 units of heat out of it. So the opposite is happening with heat pumps, where you're getting this massive efficiency boom. In hydrogen, you're having this massive drop off. So the price differential that you'd expect to see there is obviously going to be massive. The same amount of electricity is going to give you much, much more heat out of a heat pump than it is out of a hydrogen system. And that's why I'm skeptical with home heating.
Wow, that's really interesting. There's also the other element, which is the molecules for, say, gas are a different size than hydrogen, and hydrogen is tiny, 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 tiny. So it has the capacity to be leaky compared to our facilities and our infrastructure that supports gas. So would that all have to be upgraded? Do we have to rip it out, or can we actually, I don't know, put in some sort of special liner around all these gas tubes? And these pipes that actually would take quite a lot of work as well.
Yes, fundamentally, we need to upgrade the infrastructure so much. And I think if you look today, we already have loads of gas leakage, and gas is a much bigger molecule. Moving over to hydrogen, we're going to have lots more leakage. There is an argument to be made that the reality is we need to upgrade this infrastructure anyway. Therefore, we might as well make it ready for hydrogen. However, my opinion is that why put new infrastructure in the ground at all when we can just move over to electricity instead? For our heating systems. And I think there's also this other issue with hydrogen in terms of how it works within metal networks. Is it this process called embrittlement can occur, where basically hydrogen, such a small molecule, it can go through tiny little cracks and make cracks much worse, making the steel and the metals more permeable and just creating more leakage. So that needs to be addressed. And I think a lot of people are starting to accept this. For home heating, hydrogen's a goner. We're not going to be using hydrogen to heat the homes in the UK.
There's so many phrases you've used in this episode that I think are funny. Hydrogen's a goner. The tyranny of multi-process. I love that phrasing. Today, you're getting my brain going on all kinds of tangents, which is at least my brain is functioning.
So I've rambled and I've ranted about how I think hydrogen won't be important in our domestic houses for heating. I also think it won't play a very important role in cars and private mobility. There's only one company which is still pursuing hydrogen for domestic vehicles. And one of the reasons why I don't think it's going to be good for domestic vehicles, and one of the big issues with hydrogen, is it has a very, very high gravimetric energy density.
A what?
Gravimetric energy density.
I think you're just making these terms up because you think she's an American. Certainly her education was substandard. Yeah, she won't know.
So, made up word one, gravimetric energy density. So, gram for gram compared to other things, as I said earlier, like jet fuel, four times more efficient. You get four times more energy out of the molecules. However, it has a very low volumetric density. So, actually, the amount that you can get into a tank, thinking about the tanks we've got today, is bugger all effectively. So, you're going to be getting about four times less than you would in normal tanks, particularly if you compare it to things like liquefied natural gas. So, in our cars, if we want this to work, we basically need to have a really, really high pressure tank. So, it's not like whacking in your fuel at the fuel pump going, and then it's done. You've got to make this at like 700 PSI into your fuel tank to then be able to work. And that, to me, doesn't seem like a sensible approach because of all the different things that need to go on there. And again, the reality is you'd have to have a massive fuel tank for this because it has this low volumetric density.
So that's why you're saying it won't work for cars.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just not efficient. Again, coming back to our efficiency thing from earlier, if we compare a hydrogen fuel cell to a battery, we are thinking it's going to be around about 40% efficient compared to a battery, which is more like 80, 85% efficient in terms of getting that electricity and turning it into kinetic energy to drive that car forward.
All right. So we're thinking no go for our homes, no go for our cars. Is there anywhere it is a go?
So there are places where it is going to be a goer, and the hydrogen pushers are going to love it there. And there are a few things which we know it's going to be useful because it isn't really an alternative. Big one is fertilizer and fertilizer production. Secondly, it's hydrogenation and then also some other chemical processes. So within industry and within some chemical processes, it's going to be used because there aren't many other options available.
Oh, yeah.
It may be used for things like long-haul shipping, off-road vehicles, and the creation of things like steel in industry. And then we also might be using it, as I say, and I think that's where it's interesting, for long-term storage. So actually, at the moment, we talked about the fact that during the Dunkelflaute, during the time when there isn't any wind and sun, we need to store our electricity somewhere to be able to use it another time. Hydrogen could be that medium. Hydrogen could be our energy vector of the future, which we can then turn back into electricity.
I like those ideas, especially the latter one, using it as an energy store and then only rolling it out as needed.
The only issue with it is if we use that without other things, we don't have that many places to store it. So basically, the idea is that you're going to store it in disused salt mines because of the properties which exist down there. And there aren't that many of them given the amount of electricity we're going to need. So we're probably going to have to do a mix of things if we're going to make this work. So we're going to have batteries, we're going to have hydrogen, we're going to have other forms of storage as well.
What did you mean by off-road vehicles?
So things basically where you're off-road for a long, long time. So I'm thinking tanks,
Okay, yeah.
trucks which are miles away, which you can't get the electrical infrastructure in for, that sort of thing.
I see, I see.
So when you're going to have to do 800, 900 miles before you can get to the next fuel station.
That makes sense.
There is also an interesting role and potential role for things like long distance trucking, HGVs. There could be a potential role. And the reason why is because batteries are really heavy. So actually putting them in the vehicles and carrying them around is extra weight they've got to carry around. And it's kind of a 50-50 split in terms of where we're going at the moment. Some industry players are going towards batteries in these vehicles. And the reason they're going towards batteries in them is because they know that actually, my mate Jim drives 160 miles between each stop. Therefore, we have to put the right amount of batteries in for 160 miles. Then he has to stop by law. We know he has to stop by law for half an hour. We need to put a high enough power charger in so he can charge the truck up to that amount within that half an hour. We've got very easy standards to work to for that sense. So some companies are taking that approach, say, we know the distance, we know the safety laws, and we know how quickly we need to charge the vehicle. So we just put the infrastructure in place to support that. But some are going for this combined approach of having a hydrogen fuel cell and batteries. So they're reducing the weight of the trucks by adding these hydrogen fuel cells, which, as I say, literally make electricity on the truck or in the vehicle. That's how they work. So instead of having all the electricity going in beforehand, you're going to be whacking it some hydrogen in there as well, so it can generate electricity as you go in. And that means you don't need to have as big a battery, so it's a bit lighter. And obviously hydrogen, we've talked already, really, really light, really small. Therefore, you can whack a load of that on without actually adding too much extra weight. It's just a different mechanical process that needs to be available there to do that.
You got my head spinning. In a good way. We're recording this episode rather late at night, later than we normally would do it. And I'm just thinking, I'm going to go to bed shortly after we are done recording this episode. And I'm just wondering what kind of dreams I'm going to have.
That'd be exciting.
Maybe my subconscious will solve this dilemma. And we won't just have yellow hydrogen. We'll have platinum. All right, give me the hydrogen quiz. I've got my whole color chart here.
Question uno. We have talked about how hydrogen is made and the different ways that hydrogen can be made. We talked about electrolysis, this type of hydrogen that we need to make. So we make this green and yellow hydrogen through electrolysis. So it's low carbon hydrogen. By 2050, if we are to meet the amount of hydrogen demand that's expected, we need around about 3,500 gigawatts of electrolysis to be able to make that hydrogen. What I want to know from you now is how many gigawatts of electrolysis we have available for hydrogen at the moment. Is it A, 10 gigawatts, B, 100 gigawatts, C, less than 1 gigawatt, or D, I've got no idea.
Okay. Reality, it's D, but I'm going to guess 10. But I think it's actually less than one.
If you say three answers out of a four answer question, you usually get it right.
You have a 75% chance. I can do that math.
So, yeah, we have less than 1 gigawatt available capacity for electrolysis right now. They're nowhere near enough to get where we need to get to. If we think about that low carbon hydrogen, that electrolysis hydrogen, and particularly that green hydrogen, how much of our hydrogen today is being made from green hydrogen? We alluded to it earlier, but we didn't put an exact number on it. So do you think it's 10%, 5%, 3%, or 1%?
5.
Only 1% of hydrogen being made is through green processes, through electrolysis.
Are all the answers going to be related to the number one?
Yeah, why not? That could be our theme.
Why not?
So at the beginning of this, I talked about one of the perks of hydrogen, which was the fact that per unit weight, so this gravimetric energy density, the key word to take away from this, hydrogen can have around about 3 times as much energy as things like petrol or diesel or jet fuel. But the flip side of that is this volumetric density. Thinking about that in more detail then, how much less energy for volume would you get from hydrogen compared to liquefied natural gas, the comparison we made earlier?
4 times less. Ding, 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 ding. Despite the way you phrased it, I remember that.
If you've got a better way of phrasing that, I'm happy to rephrase that because I feel like it doesn't make any sense.
The way you were going, I was like, I'm not going to get this answer because I'm not following him. But then
I don't think I know what I'm talking about. That helps.
Yeah.
So obviously we've talked about price for hydrogen being a key factor in the future. At the moment, it costs around about $4 per kilogram of hydrogen to make hydrogen. For it to be cost effective and actually enter the mainstream, we need to bring the price of hydrogen down substantially. What price point do you think hydrogen will become cost competitive? Will it be $3 a kilogram, $2 a kilogram, $1 a kilogram, or 50 cents a kilogram?
50 cents.
You've missed the theme. The theme is one, and it's one is the correct answer.
Dang! That's ridiculous. I'm never paying £1 for a kilogram of hydrogen. You heard it here first.
So I don't remember what you got at all. So you can have one out of four.
Well, I legitimately did get one.
That's good enough then.
if these were colored stars, that would be a gray star versus a blue, green, or yellow.
And we've made it through a week of hot air to the end of the Ecocentrics.
If you'd like to get in touch, then our email is hello@theecocentrics.com.
Or you can find us wittering on our socials on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, or Threads, where there's some beautiful videos up now of us chatting.
Until next week, matinee! And while in English that may sound like an afternoon culture event, in Japan it means see ya!
Bye!
The Ecocentrics is produced by the spectacular Emma Newman.
Theme and quiz music composed by the better than average Morgan Bryan.
Everything else is done by Hollywood actors who just need to make a buck during the strikes. Clearly, we haven't hired any of the striking writers.